For conversation on guns, shooting, and your Second Amendment rights. Brought to you by Price RV, Auto Trim Design, by Rogers Auto Repair, and by Frontier Outfitters. Now, your host, Chuck Indereeden.
All right, welcome, listeners. You're here with Chuck at Shooter's Corner here in the great city of Fairbanks, Alaska, where it's currently 63 degrees, partly cloudy, well, sunny. It beats a, that's the other S word that we like to use here.
That's the good S word.
That's a good S word.
Yeah.
But who knows? It is Fairbanks in June, and it still has a possibility of snow.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, nothing surprises me anymore. So anyways, June 11th here, and as always, feel free to call in 458-TALK, 458-8255, and use that prefix 907 if you happen to be out of state. I guess you got to use that 907 every time now. Like, the area code has to be used, even if you call in state. It was kind of weird. I tried calling something the other day, and I was like, this number cannot be completed as dialed. I was like, well, okay, whatever. Moving on. Also, remember, you can always listen live to the show at KFARradio.com. Just click on that big orange ball that says listen live, and you can also use the Google or Apple app to listen to the show as always. Let's start, because we have a guest as well that we're going to get on the show. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Hey, just a friendly reminder, tonight, the Alaska Outdoor Mentorship Program, 5:30 to 7, that's 1730 to 1900 for you military-type folk over at TVSA Range. They're going to be discussing the 40-mile caribou herd. I think we had a discussion last week on how that got named.
We had a really good discussion. We had some, a hypothesis as to how it was named, and we were disproven pretty quick.
Probably logical feedback as to that
within,
hypothesis.
Within seconds of us spewing out our nonsense. It was perfect. It was good.
It wasn't nonsense.
No.
It's a hypothesis, so therefore it's based on an educated guess.
Yeah, I think we'd be dumb not to guess.
An uneducated guess. Yeah. Doesn't matter. Remember, public shooting hours over there at TVSA Range as well. Thursdays, 6 to 8. Cost is only $5 for members, $20 for non-members. C4 Training Group is going to be hosting the Active Self-Protection Skills Summit June 20th, 21st. That's next weekend. That's next weekend. Not this weekend coming up, but next weekend after. There's still room for you to sign up for those classes. And we're going to have Chris Bean on the show with us today. He's going to be one of the instructors that will be teaching that. ACHP is listed on the C4 Training Group website, July 18th and 19th. If you were waiting till after summer, we've opened up one for the summer session, which we normally do not do, but because of popular demand, we need to put one out there. So we decided July 18th and 19th. So anyways, if you want to get your ACHP or just a basic pistol class, or you've had somebody who's never been trained before on a handgun and you want to allow them to get trained by true professionals, this is the class for them to sign up at. Also, remember, our rifle class is July 25th, 26th. Basic class is on July 25th. Advanced class is on July 26th. So it's separated over two different days. And there you have that. Hey, you want to let Chris on?
Yeah, let's see. Chris, you should be on. Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Loud and clear.
It's like an AT&T commercial sometimes.
That's perfect, yeah. Can you hear me now?
Hear me now. Hey, so I wanted to bring you on board real quick earlier in the show there, Chris, just so you can get introduced. We just briefly gave an announcement as to the Active Self-Protection Skills Summit that's happening on June 20th and 21st, and that there's still some slots to sign up, and that you're one of the instructors that we're going to have on there. So I'll give you an opportunity here in a minute to expand on, hey, kind of like what we do, why we do it, and how that will benefit you as the armed citizen. How's that sound?
Sure.
All right, awesome. Let me go through this week in firearms history real quick, because it does pertain to our previous conversations about Lexington and Concord. And the reason why we're kind of emphasizing this is because it is our 250th anniversary as our country, as great as it is. So we're going to talk about the Battle of Machias. Machias was in Maine. At the time, I think it was annexed as Massachusetts, but it doesn't matter. So it's also known as the Battle of Margarita. Now, you're probably thinking to yourself, okay, this is probably some naval engagement. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It was often referred to as the Lexington of the Sea. And just weeks after the fighting of Lexington and Concord, a small group of armed American colonists in Micah's, Maine, then part of Massachusetts, took on the British Royal Navy using their personal muskets and whatever weapons they could find. Here's what happened. The British armed schooner HMS Margarita sailed in to Micaiah's to enforce British authority and possibly seize the town supply of gunpowder and military stores. Ah, seems like a common theme back then. This time they decided to use a boat.
Bring the big guns.
Yeah, well, we'll see how that worked out for them. Local patriots, led by Jeremiah O'Brien and Benjamin Foster, refused to submit. They armed themselves with muskets, axes, pitchforks, and swords, then commandeered a local sloop named Unity. The colonists gave chase and engaged the British ship in a fierce running fight. Sounds like guerrilla warfare.
Really does. Which, I mean, that's pretty much all they had. If you weren't in a formation going line by line, it was all guerrilla after that.
Mm-hmm. They exchanged musket fire at close range, boarded the Margarita, and had margaritas. Now,
nice.
They fought hand-to-hand on her decks. The British commander was mortally wounded by a musket ball. After intense fighting, the Americans captured the schooner. Here's why the victory was significant. It proved that ordinary armed citizens, not professional soldiers, or a navy, could successfully challenge British naval power. The colonists immediately turned the captured swivel guns and cannon from the Margarita against other British vessels, creating one of the first American armed vessels of the war, which was later named the Micaiah's Liberty. It showed that the right of citizens to keep and bear arms extended beyond home defense. It could be used to resist government forces at sea as well as on land. I'm sure that whole dynamic would probably change a little bit in today's current society.
Yeah.
I was kind of thinking, maybe I should ask ChatGPT how you could attack a Navy destroyer now.
I think that would be a really good thing,
I think that would be a heck of a flag.
Yeah.
They would show up.
Yeah, you'd actually be testing local and federal law enforcement response time with that cue. So I would not.
You're going to be on a list.
Yeah, just
as if I'm already not.
Yeah.
But yeah, we would definitely make a list. But the Ukrainians have already proved that it could happen.
Yeah.
So they have taken out several Russian vessels.
Yep. Those drone submersibles that they have are actually very interesting because while they are large and they do pack a punch, with what you're doing and with what you're able to do with such a small craft and stay under the radar and beat their ability to detect incoming, it is insane. Watching those videos, it's cool. It's cool to see technology advance. It's horrifying to see it in the way that it is.
Yeah, it kind of makes me glad that I'm not in the Army.
Yeah, I'm glad I got out.
Yeah, I'm glad I'm out. Glad I retired. So, all right, Chris, let's go on to you. Tell us, listeners, a little bit about yourself.
Well, first, let me mention this. The last time we talked, it was negative 39 on this. So now it's 63 and partly sunny. So congratulations on that.
Oh, yeah. And we have, what, like 22 hours of daylight now?
Yeah, we're at 24 now. I haven't seen the sun disappear in a few months.
Well, the sun sets at 0036 and rises at 0304. So I hope you and Neil bring, like, sleeping blinders.
Yeah, so much time for activities.
Yeah.
So to jump in, a little bit about myself, my name's Christopher Bean. I am one of the instructor cadre and one of the two people actually doing road courses for active self-protection now. Neil Widener and myself kind of handle all of the road courses across the lower 48 and soon to be Alaska. We are part of a company called Active Self-Protection, which for over about a decade has been the quintessential resource for actual real-world analyzation of defensive gun uses and defensive encounters. And really what we do is try and take the information we've learned and apply it to actual classes where people can learn how to improve their skills and improve their ability to apply those skills, hopefully for success if they ever have to use these guns for something other than shooting produce and animals and things like that, because people do interesting things. So we want to make sure people have a leg up and the best they can with what they've got. And that's kind of the gist of the class this year or the last 2 years we've been running.
Right. We only have a minute, but just a quick lead in on that. You've taken probably, what, 60,000 videos now, analyzed them between your team, and have essentially extrapolated the important stuff.
Correct.
Not works, not stupid range games, but stuff that actually works based off of empirical data, and not just like, oh, well, this may happen. No, this is like, no, this has happened, and here's what the outcome was. And, oh, by the way, here's how you'll probably perform if you don't have any training.
Absolutely true.
Yeah. All right, we got to go into our first break. You stay on the line. You can listen in to the local news and weather. I think we got a Valdez fishing report that's starting to come in now, which is going to consume a lot of our on-air time, too.
Yeah, 12-minute breaks.
Yeah, that sucks. All right. Anyways, we'll be right back after this break. Stay tuned here at Shooter's Corner with Chuck and Matt and our special guest, Chris, 97.5, 660 AM.
What does life after service look like? Kicking back? Taking it easy? We believe it looks a little different. Fighting for all veterans. Making sure they get the benefits and care they've earned. Rebuilding communities after disaster strikes. And adapting to support today's veterans, meeting them where they are. The VFW, still leading, still advancing, still serving. Get involved at stillserving.org.
It's time for the Valdez Fishing Report. Interviews, derby standings, tips, and advice for Prince William Sound. We're here with David Brady of Valdez, Alaska. And David, are you an avid halibut angler?
I am an avid fisherman. However, I just moved to Alaska about 8 months ago in October, and this was my very first time fishing in Alaska, and that was the first fish I've ever caught in Alaska.
The 94.4-pound halibut, and you got on the leaderboard for the derby, right?
Yes.
How does it compare to your other fishing experiences?
I've fished a lot on the East Coast, and I've caught some big fish, but this was by far the biggest fish that I've ever caught. And it was a different fight than the fish that I've caught out in the ocean on the East Coast. It was a lot of fun reeling this one in, and when he came up to the surface, you just see the sheer size of this fish.
What was the biggest surprise to you about halibut fishing?
I'd say the biggest surprise was it fought really hard, and how sore I was the next day after reeling it in.
You said, though, it only took you about 15 minutes to get it to the surface, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, I got him in quick, but it took some strength to do it.
Next time you might slow down?
Probably. Take my time with him.
Go fishing, Valdez. Easy Freeze is open 5:30 a.m. to 9 p.m. daily. They can book your fishing charter and blast freeze and vacuum pack your fish. Going out on a private boat? Come get your bait and ice. Easy Freeze can process your catch, too. They've got a variety of seafood for sale at their shop on Chittenah Drive. And if you have special requests for pickups or drop-offs, they'll do their best to accommodate. Easy Freeze.
KVAK's Valdez Fishing Report. Fish Valdez and reel in a big one.
It's that time of year again. The sun is out, roads are clear, and gravel is everywhere. At Auto Trim Design, we have you covered. With our self-healing paint protection film, keeping your paint looking showroom new and defending from rock chips and scratches, helping your car stay flawless for years. With our ceramic window tint, not only will it add a stylish look, it also provides protection from harmful UV rays, reduces glare, blocks heat, and increases privacy. From exterior protection to interior comfort, Auto Trim Design has you covered. Stop by or give us a call to get your vehicle ready for summer in Alaska.
What does it look like when your faithful friend in the driveway has an off day? Well, it looks like no fun, like bumming a ride to work, the store, rescheduling lunch with your yoga instructor, all because your four-wheeled pal is waiting for parts. We do our own routine maintenance, but our chariot depends on us to schedule that for them. Airboat and inboard service too. Family owned and operated. Keeping Fairbanks on the road since 1967. Rogers Auto Repair.
KFAR weather.
A blend of clouds and sun this afternoon, with a slight chance for showers. Highs level off around 72, winds out of the west, 5 to 10 miles per hour. 48 tonight, slight chance for showers. Chance of thunderstorms tomorrow, daytime highs approaching 73, partly cloudy skies. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
And now back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
All right, welcome back, listeners. You're with Chuck and Matt here at Shooter's Corner here in the great city of Fairbanks, Alaska, where it's now still, 63 degrees. And luckily for us, the room is only at 79.
Yeah,
it's perfect. It's not a blazing 97 degrees as it's been in the past. But nonetheless, we have Christopher Bean, who's one of the members of the Active Self-Protection Mobile Training Team. I like that, the MTT.
Mobile training.
Just made that up.
It's got a good ring to it.
Yeah, you can steal that, man,
yeah.
Chris.
Yeah.
Yeah, the MTT.
It's logged.
It's locked. The mobile training team. Sounds so official. Anyways, you were telling us a little bit about yourself and the class structure and stuff. If you could, give us and the listeners maybe an idea of kind of like how a day is structured in this class. Like, what's kind of their bang for the buck that they would get when they show up on Saturday morning?
Well, that's kind of interesting because the classes are kind of bespoke, right? We have a concept of where we want to get. But really, it's about putting people in situations where they can figure out first and foremost is what they believe true. So whatever their skill level is, we're going to test that. We're going to find out if these things work or don't work. And along the way, just provide some guidance and some ideas on how to improve that. So it's really driven by the audience in the class. If you have very high-skilled individuals or a mix thereof, you can kind of just play with how we're exploring ideas. But really, you come in, and on day one of a two-day class, day one is really about skill development. We figure out where people are, what they're capable of. We apply a little bit of pressure to figure out if those skills hold up. And then you run into day two, which is really about application of that skill in environments where you may not have had the opportunity to do that before. And then figure out, does it really hold up? So super fun. It's an entertaining way to learn and a much more effective way for adults to learn through exploration and proof if what they believe is indeed true.
And what would be some of those, like, scenarios, or you kind of said, like, we'll give them some stressors or whatever to see if those trends or those skill sets that they have actually are applicable. Like, what would be an example of that, maybe?
Well, and I think you've probably seen this, too, where most people believe they possess a superior level of skill because they've owned guns, had guns. The moment you introduce time or measurement, you probably know everyone thinks they have a 1 second draw. Everyone thinks they have a 1 second draw until you measure it. And once you measure it, you tend to find out what you're really doing, what you're really capable of. And once that kind of presents to you, now you can actually get where you want to go because you're not living in what you believe. You're living in what is true. So it kind of starts with time. Then we put people in novel situations. I can't tell you too much because that'll give away the sauce. Mm-hmm. But we introduce a little bit of ambiguity where if it's not 100% structured, do this, that equals that. That also puts a little bit of self-created pressure on folks. And it can go as far into that as one could imagine.
Okay. So, without giving away the secret sauce, let's talk about something that a lot of people, I would say, stress in gun classes that I have seen. Mm-hmm. And let's call them slide lock reloads.
Mm-hmm.
Or a combat reload, depending on your vernacular, right? What is the empirical data on maybe what your class thinks of a slide lock reload? Like, what have we seen? Because we've always heard this stupid thing where it's like all gunfights are in 3-3-3. 3 yards, 3 rounds, 3 seconds, and they're done. Like, okay,
sure,
whatever, they're genius. but nonetheless, what do you think about that? Just curious.
Well, what we've seen, if we're talking about the evidence,
okay,
reloads in civilian encounters are very, very, very low. I think maybe one or two that have been seen. However, that doesn't mean it'll never happen to you.
Right.
So that's the thing that people have to understand. you might be number three in the data pool. So what tends to happen, if we're just talking about that in general, people think it's very easy to break contact with a gun, get a magazine, put a magazine in a gun, load gun. Sounds easy, but if you've never practiced it, never experienced it under any kind of stress, I think you will find putting the peg in the hole to be significantly more difficult than you imagined.
And I agree with you. One of the things that we've always taught in our classes is you have to practice, right? That perfect practice makes perfect. And you probably have heard me say that once before. In that if you don't have a file and a folder to go to, then you're not going to be able to, you know, perform that task. So are you emphasizing repetition or are you emphasizing correct technique? And there's a follow-up to the technique one, but go ahead.
So it's interesting how you're going, right? But I will say technique is the one thing you have to worry about. And you'll also have to worry about rote repetition. So if you're doing repetition and all variables are the same every time, when you go to employ said skill and those variables are not the same, do you have the mental bandwidth to get through it? Do you have the mental bandwidth to take care of it? So there's a little bit of both. We do some repetition, but we also change the variables in which you're doing these skills. So as you're doing the skills, it's not standing static exactly at the same place. We're going to count to three, and then you do this. Mm-hmm. There's things that will change to see, can I do this in multiple places? Why is that important? I think it's important for the practitioner because belief is a quotient. Belief and faith in your ability is a big deal. Once you feel confident that you can do it, the likelihood of you being able to do it with different variables increases dramatically.
And you kind of hit on one particular point that said in multiple places. Are you talking like locations? Or one of the other things that I've seen, and this goes back to the technique, is that shooters or students, I should say, tend to have different setups for different occasions, right? And I've preached this in our classes before. Like, you need to be consistent in your setup. Like, you cannot have a Sunday holster and carry a 1911 to church, and then on Monday through Friday, you carry a Glock in an appendix waist holster. Because the presentation is different, because the gun system is different, like, why are you changing this up and creating this your own potential fail point, I guess would be, I don't know. I see it a lot with, law enforcement, too. Off-duty gun, 1911. On-duty gun, Glock. Okay.
Right.
And when you, and after all the repetition that you've got on the range or whatever, and be quite honest with you, cops don't even really get more than 80 hours of gun training at the academy. And then they're kicked out to the field. That doesn't necessarily develop confidence. But nonetheless, I mean, you've seen a lot of videos, especially with law enforcement, 15-round mag dump and nobody got hit except for the school bus full of nuns. But
right. Something got hit.
Oh, yeah. Somebody's house. But.
Yeah, and I think with that, a big important piece of what we try and do as well is just prove this, right? Because if we have skill in one area, we believe it's all encompassing. If we change guns, we believe everything will be exactly the same. And we never test it. We never know the difference or if that difference even exists. So that starts falling into false confidence, which is a more slippery slope been no confidence, if you ask me.
And confidence is developed by doing what?
Actually doing the work, proving that you can do it, actually getting data and evidence that this says X, knowing your numbers. I think the easiest way for most people is the drawing of a gun. If you know that you possess a 1.5 second draw,
to first round hit.
Yeah, to first round hit. And you're in a situation where you do not have 1.5 seconds. You have 1 second. Mm-hmm. The likelihood of you making a different decision is high, hopefully.
Yeah.
Where you're not gambling. That's the biggest thing I see with defensive gun use is either you opt out due to fear or you're gambling because you don't know actually what you're capable of. So that's the biggest crux for me.
Okay. Well, we got to get ready to go into our mandatory break. Well, when we hear the music, we'll just know that it's there. So this is the one for the national news and stuff like that. But when we come back, I want to continue on this conversation about performance expectations. Like, I have literally seen people that do not sign up for classes because they don't want to get in front of other students or instructors and fail. And I think that's kind of the mindset with a lot of people. So,
that's a great topic.
Anyways, when we come back after this mandatory break, you'll be here with Chris, Matt, myself, here at Shooter's Corner, 97.5 FM, 660 AM. We'll be right back after this break.
The Tanana Herb Company, relieving stress in Fairbanks since 2016. Proud sponsor of
News. I'm John Saucier. President Trump is threatening more strikes against Iran tonight, but on social media, he now writes, based on the fact that discussions with the Islamic Republic of Iran have been brought to the highest level of Iranian leadership and approved, I have, as President of the United States of America, canceled the scheduled strikes and bombings against Iran this evening. He does say the naval blockade will remain in effect. This morning on Fox and Friends, the president says Iran's military has been decimated.
I don't want to have boots on the ground, but if I wanted to, we could put a small group of soldiers and take over the whole place. They're finished.
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, he says this conflict is putting the entire country at risk.
It doesn't take a military genius to see that Trump's fiasco of a war with Iran never ended. Not with American helicopters being shot down. Not when American bases are being attacked and American troops are coming under fire.
America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
The Fairbanks Daily News Miner reports the Alaska Department of Health identified 400 project nominations for the $272 million earmarked for Alaska through the Federal Rural Health Transformation Program, including several in the Fairbanks area. The Rural Health Transformation Program was created in 2025 through the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, a budget reconciliation bill backed by the Trump administration. The Rural Health Program provides $50 billion to all 50 states, with Alaska getting as much as $1.36 billion. Over 5 years. The program was a compromise supported by Senators Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan after the bill created new work requirements for Medicaid that could cause thousands of Alaskans to lose access to health insurance. Several Fairbanks-based proposals include ones by Alaska Behavioral Health, the City of Fairbanks, and the Tanana Chiefs Conference. The Greater Fairbanks Community Hospital Foundation requested $8.5 million to renovate and expand the FMH Porter Heart and Vascular Clinic.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
There's fishing, and then there's dip netting. Frontier Outfitters knows you need to maximize your catch and that you're working against the clock. So they make it real easy for you to get what you need fast. Whether you're on a boat or shore, from permits to dip nets, they carry fighting handles, D-handles, and more. So your tired, numb hands can hold on when that big king tries to yank your gear into the river. Plus those poles and the extensions for those deep holes and replacement nets as well. Your next outdoor adventure starts at Frontier Outfitters for your Alaskan lifestyle.
Hey Fairbanks, Bryant from Auto Trim Design. Now's the perfect time to get your work trucks set up right. From toppers, back racks, beacons, running board seat covers, floor liners, bed slides, ladder racks, and so much more. Auto Trim Design has everything you need to tackle any job. Our commercial toppers keep your equipment and tools secure and out of the elements. Need to keep your bed organized? Add a deck drawer system to easily access all your gear. Contact Auto Trim Design for your professional truck grade accessories today.
Customized by Auto Trim Design.
And now back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
All right, welcome back, listeners. You're with Chuck here at Shooter's Corner, and we have Matt running the board for us, as always, and partner in crime, and we got Christopher Bean on the phone with us. He's down in the lower 48, and he's part of that mobile training team with the Active Self-Protection group, I should say, and they're going to be coming up on June 20th and 21st, do classes here in Fairbanks, Alaska. As always, you can go to c4traininggroup.com, and you'll see the link on there to go and sign up, or you can go to activeselfprotection.com and sign up for the class there. There are still spaces available. This is an excellent opportunity to get training from great trainers from the lower 48 who have taken and cut out some time of their schedule to come up to the 49th state and get some training. All right, so where we left off was talking about, I don't know, performance anxiety. And how people tend to not want to take classes because they don't want, I don't know, I would call it, I'm probably going to like PO some people off here, but I'm going to do it anyways because that's kind of my nature. But I think that sometimes people don't want to put themselves in situations where they're tested because they're afraid of failure.
Sure.
But I think failure is kind of, I don't know, I wouldn't call it necessarily a grade sheet, but at least gives you a data point to say, here's the things that I need to work on. Like,
yeah, it's a requirement. And you're going to hear this in class. But the one of the things I say in open, where we go into a class or we're worried about taking a class for exactly that, we're afraid of failing. And I have a quip that I use going, you paid me to analyze your shooting, not to judge it. And I think that's what people fail to realize is in class environments, we as instructors, and what you'll find is the community, they become your advocates, not your adversaries. And yeah, that fear of judgment is, it really keeps you in the same place you are, because you never get to kind of face or be exposed to what is really there. And failing in those environments, that's why you train. You deal with the hard things in training, so if you ever have to use it in the really real world, you know, the chances of getting it done are significantly higher because you've already been exposed to a little bit of stress.
Correct. Even if it's just a timer.
Right, and your brain doesn't know the difference, as I hate to say to people, but your brain doesn't know stress is stress.
Yeah. I had to look this up real quick, but one of the things that I also do is I teach a Homeland Security Emergency Management class up at the UAF, and I add this in there. It's like, one might reframe failure as a data point for after-action review to emphasize resilience and continuous improvement. Like, I think that would be a good way of saying, like, you're not coming to the class to see what your fail points are. You're coming to class to analyze, I don't know, your performance to get better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because as we know, I mean, the old adage that you never rise to the occasion, you always fall to your lowest level of training, right? Got it. I mean, that's been said since time immemorial. I don't know, since some Greek guy said it. But anyways. Anyways, it is value. I mean, that's actual truth to the matter. Like, you're not just going to jump up and act, like, unless you have a file. Right. So that's what this is for. And I like the fact that you said that you're an advocate and not an adversary. Yeah. And I think that's incredibly important for the instructors know that. I've been to one gun class with probably a national guy, and he was competing with the students in the class.
Oh, don't get me going.
Oh, no. And
you look at my Facebook page, but.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because I saw your video this morning and I had to laugh out loud. And I was like, man, you are absolutely on point and accurate as to the description of the YouTubers, right? Yeah. Because it's true. Not to steal the thunder here, but case in point, right? Like, everybody knows already how to shoot. They're good. They got it. They're experts. I got to tell you, and Matt can attest to this, and Craig, one of our other instructors as well, probably the biggest, I wouldn't say failures, but the biggest military people that come to the class, what would be a way of phrasing that? Like, over expectations of their performance capabilities. Yep. Like, I don't know, I'm just throwing words out there. But it's like they have this higher thought process of how they're going to actually perform, and I got it, right? Some of us have been able to perform in combat. Some of us never have been. But we had this lady who showed up to one of our classes and stuff like that. And she was like, hey, I just want to let the whole class know that, my husband. And she kind of threw herself on her sword, and apparently her husband too. But she was like, yeah, my husband, you know, wanted to teach me how to do this stuff before I came to class. And I was like, okay, cool. So what happened? She was like, pulled out her phone and it has a bullet hole through it. And he was like, yeah, he was teaching me how to unload the gun in the backyard. And I was like, okay, what's his like background training? He was like, oh, he did 20 years in the Air Force. Okay, got it. What do you do? Mechanic. Cool. Okay. Not a disparaging comment against Air Force. Don't track me wrong. Okay. That's not the deal here. Could have been the Coast Guard for all we care. But anyways, nonetheless.
And to further that, and this is not to disparage anything, but military application, the pistol is not the primary tool. So even in MOSs that have access to pistol, you're talking about maybe 50 rounds a year, maybe. Normally it's about 8.
Oh, I know. I used to run the gunnery program for an entire battalion. I know exactly how many times the officer or a person who was assigned a handgun actually qualify, and it's probably only 2 times a year, maximum 50 rounds per that, and any pre-marksmanship training is limited at that.
Yep.
Right? And don't add in DENTAC or MEDAC, right, or any of the strap hangers, right, support organizations that might only do it once a year and they get their 40 rounds and they're done. It's like wham bam, thank you ma'am, right? Get off the range. But this guy decided to show his wife how to unload and clear the gun, so he racks around out of there, drops a magazine out, points it in a safe direction, her phone, or a direction of least consequence, and presses a trigger and boom, blows a hole through it. I was like, okay, so where did he go wrong? And the whole class like didn't drop the magazine out first. Yep. Right? Then lock the slide to the rear. And so it was a great learning point for everybody that just because somebody says that they got training on it or they're good at it doesn't necessarily show or demonstrate that they do. And so I would say some of my biggest violators of safety is probably law enforcement and military.
I think the issue with that is, like, I can't attest to the law enforcement side, but for the military side, when you go through, I think the first thing is basic training. And when you're getting broken down from your civilian normal mindset to this, here's how we're going to tell you how to think, act, whatever. But you go through all this training and then you're told you're the best of your job. You know, you're doing this because they're trying to get you that, that false sense of security with, like, if I'm not hiding, I'm able to go out there and do more, and I'm able to, and they constantly are saying, you're the best, you guys are the killers, you're doing all this. So then you start out with this false sense of, I'm a great shooter. And then when they get outclassed by some, you know, 12-year-old girl at their local whatever, they get a little upset and they kind of bring it in. Yeah, exactly. And I think that's where I've seen it. A lot of, Chuck and I were talking about this, a lot of my buddies, you know, when we go to the range or we're doing any training, they're either teaching the wrong stuff because that's what they were taught and they thought that was it, or they've self-taught, thought they didn't have to go to anything else, and then it's a recipe for disaster on their end. And those people usually are the hardest to sit down with them and say, here's where you're wrong, here's where you're right, here's how we can get better.
Sure. And it's important, and I think there's a couple valid points in there. One, vocation does not equal prowess. That's the first one. And two, prowess in one area does not necessarily mean prowess in others. So both of those are things that you have to look at everything, not just in aggregate, but individually and in detail.
Right.
And figure out, is what I'm learning applicable for my use case now?
True. I like that. And that's why we're really excited to see the content that you're going to put out in this class between you and Neil. And the reason why I say that is because I had the opportunity to be on, for the short period of time that it existed, the NRA Carry Guard team, which was all these CAG and Dev Group guys, to be quite honest with you. I was like the only law enforcement guy on the team, and I had a different perspective than what they had, right? They were all like, shoot him in the face, let God sort it out. You cannot do that as an armed citizen. That's not applicable, man.
Yeah,
like your mission set, like is totally, yeah, your mission set and your programming.
And that's another, I mean, we're going all over the place, but that's another thing that people don't necessarily think about. There's winning the fight and, you know, I'm going to survive for my family or I'm going to save my family. And then there's going to prison afterwards where you are still de facto destroying your family.
Right.
So it's who he deserves.
Well, we have to go into our last break. And when we come back, I mean, let's just kind of I'm going to throw an idea out there. Let's talk about, when we come back from the break, maybe some of the indicators or some things that maybe you and Neil would probably be putting together to help the armed citizen have a better understanding of what their capabilities are, what they can work on maybe to improve those capabilities to, you know, win the fight if and when it occurs, and then maybe the mindset that's kind of needed as well. I don't know. Just kind of throwing some things out there to think about. But hey, everybody, stay tuned here with Chris, Chuck, and Matt here at Shooter's Corner here at KFAR Radio, Great City of Fairbanks, Alaska, 97.5 FM, 660 AM. We'll be right back after this break.
What does it look like when your faithful friend in the driveway has an off day? Well, it looks like no fun, like bumming a ride to work, the store, rescheduling lunch with your yoga instructor, all because your four-wheeled pal is waiting for parts. We do our own routine maintenance, but our chariot depends on us to schedule that for them. Airboat and inboard service too, family owned and operated, keeping Fairbanks on the road since 1967. Rogers Auto Repair.
Summer in Alaska is calling. Is your ride ready? From camping trips and fishing weekends to road trips, ATVs, boats, and side-by-sides, summer fun starts with a vehicle that works and plays as hard as you do. At Auto Trim Design in Fairbanks, they help you gear up with accessories and upgrades that make every adventure better. From truck accessories and window tint to remote starters, audio, and more. This summer, take the scenic route, hit the trails, and enjoy every mile, knowing your ride was customized by Auto Trim Design.
KFAR weather.
Sunshine mixed with clouds at times this afternoon with a slight chance of rain showers. High temperatures reach up to 72. Winds out of the west 5 to 10 miles an hour. Partly cloudy skies again tonight. Slight chance of rain showers. Lows level off around 48. That's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Derek Height.
And now back to Shooter's Corner on KFAR Radio.
All right, welcome back, listeners. You're here with Chuck at Shooter's Corner. We have Matt running the board, and we have Christopher Bean with the Active Self-Protection Mobile Training Team. That just rolls off the tongue now.
You're a dick if you keep using it.
The ASP-MTT, I like it.
Yeah, ASP-MTT. Yeah, there you go. I'm all about acronyms, like just because they sound cool. But all right. Before we went on the break, we were talking about performance anxiety, people not wanting to take training because they're, I don't know, afraid to establish data points in their fail-safe system in their own mind. But we mentioned possibly, like, what do you, Chris and Neil, bring to the table that will help the average armed citizen maybe increase their performance capabilities to where if they had an encounter, like, what's not to give away the secret sauce, but kind of like what's a structure of this that's going to help them? So one of the things you had mentioned was draw stroke, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I know that you're kind of an advocate for maybe for the appendix carry, but let's say somebody's like a 3-4 o'clock inside the waistband kind of guy, right? Does it matter?
Not really. To an extent, not really. So I would struggle to say I'm an appendix carry advocate. That's just from evidence what works the best for me. That doesn't mean it will work the best for everyone else.
Right.
So let's just say those different places. I'm not going to tell you how to stow your gear. But what I'm going to do is test how you stow your gear. And that's the one promise I will give anyone that trains with us. When you leave, you will know. It will not be an imaginary idea. It will not be fallacious. You'll absolutely know how long it takes you to do something, if you can do something effectively with different variables, things like that. Then you can actually progress forward if you choose to, or stick with what you got. But that's the biggest point I can make is, we wanted everything to be comfortable, or because we started like this, this is the way it is, or we think this, but we never test it. We never find out, does that really work the way I think it does?
I like how you said that. You literally, or words to the effect of, not going to tell you how to stow your gear. I will test how you store your gear.
Correct.
I think that's important. I've seen people show up at our classes before where they have the holster integrated. I mean, the magazine pouch is integrated with the holster on the right side. And it's like, okay, show me how you're going to be able to get to your spare magazine on a slide lock reload with your support hand reaching across your girth of your lunch muscle and without having to restow your gun or anything else. Like, show me how that's going to work.
Right.
Is that what you think by testing?
Well, and then there's like the gun guy, the people, all of us that have like, you know, formulated opinions, right?
Sure.
But there's also this, and as an instructor or a coach, this is what I think about. I am not trying to create facsimiles of me.
Right.
I am trying to make sure you survive if you get in a fight. So if that's what you're going to have, that's what we're going to figure out. And if it is a dumpster fire, at least now you know. You know, and you're not wasting money on something trying to find the answer. You know what will or will not work. And then that's all we can ask for as professionals in this space is how you do it. It's your fight, right? But Does it actually work? Maybe yes, maybe no. And if it doesn't, you're not going to be judged or laughed at. We're just simply going to go, well, now we know.
Yeah, exactly. And it's better to find that out on even a flat range than in a Circle K.
Yeah, absolutely better to find out in a flat range than a Circle K.
Yeah.
I'd rather 100% my buddies laugh at me for me drawing something and my, you know, something happening versus, you know, I become a liability in a Walmart parking lot because I wasn't prepared to do anything. I mean, just recently we had that guy run up to some random person around here and just get shot in the head and ran off. And he had the wherewithal to try to back up and get away, but wasn't prepared himself. It looks like he tried to draw something, but, you know, he's not there. And I guarantee if there was more practice involved, he might have had the upper hand in some situation. If he would have known what he was doing, he might have had it. But, you know, you find out in the worst time possible. You're never going to find out just having fun, like how truly devastating doing the wrong things and thinking they're right is going to be.
Right. That kind of circles us back to what we were talking about fear of training or fear of exposure of being less than or a non-expert. If that level of fear keeps you from actually developing yourself for when it will actually matter and there's real consequences, it's a grave, grave, grave mistake.
True. I like the fear of exposure to training. I think that's probably the biggest thing people, man, I keep falling back on. People just don't like to see themselves fail. But I think it's critical for professional development, but like a self-development. Like,
well, and I think that's something too for all, I mean, everyone on this call, right? The panel, like all of us, at some point, excuse my French, but sucked at this. But we're willing to analyze the suck and change variables over time. Everyone does. And if you think you don't, you probably just haven't been exposed to it yet, no matter how good you are. When I'm pushing for new levels of ability, things like that, it is coupled with systematic failure. But eventually, you don't fail anymore. And then you can do magic tricks.
Mm-hmm. And the magic trick being survival of a fight, period.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, that's the goal.
Yeah.
Being able to win the gunfight with accurate, fast fire.
And I think, Chuck, with what you're saying, too, is the people don't want to be exposed to maybe criticism, critique, anything of that nature, where they're going to go to a class and feel like they're being put down, which none of us do. I think the other aspect of it is people just get, I mean, humans by nature are lazy. You get comfortable, you get complacent, and you want to stay there. And I think the other part of it is maybe these groups, again, I've seen it a lot, especially on public ranges, where a group of people go out and they have their kind of their ringleader in that group who's telling everyone how to shoot. Mm-hmm. And they don't want to listen to anyone else but him because they have the personal experience with him. They know his backstory and all that. So they think that knowledge is the end all be all. He's got the Ten Commandments of firearms. And then they look at a class and they see, you know, maybe a promotional video or a clip from something. And they're like, oh, I can't believe he did that. And then they just ignore it entirely. And they think, my buddy knows everything. That means I know everything. And I don't want to go and pay money to go learn what I already know.
Well, Chris and Neil are both in that, the lower 48 instructor yeah. world. So they've seen that.
Yeah.
Where there are diehard followers of certain disciples of gun world mm-hmm. down there,
oh, yeah.
and they do not deviate away from them regardless of how bad they might be. So
yeah, the cult of YouTube is very bad.
But that's just the point. Look, the bottom line for listeners out there and future students is to understand that this is not a got me type gun class. This is not two people like Chris and Neil coming up here and saying like, hey, it's our way or the highway.
Yep.
Oh, gosh.
This is literally their years of experience of not only just analyzing this, but also being good instructors themselves, excellent instructors themselves. I've told listeners on this show before that I participated in that active self-protection instructor development class with these guys, and their ability just to convey information is beyond reproach. Like, it's excellent. Without getting up in your grill and threatening you and everything else, like, you're doing it my way, or you're all right, you're going to die, like your whole family's dead now. No, that's not happening. Like, we're just going to work on the technique, get you squared away, get you right on, and stuff like that. So, tell me, Chris, like, what's your teaching philosophy?
Ah, that's an interesting one, because it's changed over the years, but I kind of live, if we're going to be nerdy, in like a Socratic kind of idea. Because I don't believe I have all the answers. I'm developing at the same time the students are developing. You know, I take at least 4 classes a year, have for the last 35 years, because things develop and we change. Our bodies change the way they work. My thoughts about and opinions about things change. So I really want to find out who is the person in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
It is not what I do. Because what I do took 35 years to develop. If I have 16 hours with you, the chances of you developing that and being able to use it right now are extremely low. So it's more about what do you have? Can we prove it to be effective or not? And if it's not effective, let's be honest about it and let's change it right now. And let's take that information and that change and make it more effective right now. But that's all driven by the student's motivation. What are they trying to learn? What is important to them? Not what's important to me. Because I don't go to teach classes to get my ego fed. I go [S2] Right. [S1] To teach classes to help other people be better prepared. And it's not always like that, unfortunately. But eventually, the good ones find that in themselves, where it's really... I serve the students. The students do not serve me.
Exactly. And that's why you probably have caught on that I like to use the word teach instead of instruct. I think teach is that dichotomy of back and forth flow of information. Instruct is just a one-way communication. So,
yeah,
I think...
I almost like to use, like, coach.
Yeah.
Which is kind of my word versus instructor because... Again, that goes back to the advocate thing. Instructor means there's a hierarchical relationship. I know more than you. You need to do this.
Right.
Where a coach is, I'm here to evaluate what strengths and weaknesses you have, and let's leverage all of it.
Good. Yeah. Coach. Mentor. Like it. So if you want a good coaching session,
yeah,
you got June 20th and 21st. Coming up here in Fairbanks, Alaska with Chris and Neil.
It's not going to be an NFL combine.
No, it's not an NFL. You know, we're not doing sprints or anything, are we? In shooting?
No.
I was going to say we might have to rethink like this.
You think I'm doing sprints?
I just want to see Neil sprint around the range. So, okay. Well, I think that's excellent. Chris, I really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy day down there and wherever you are on the East Coast and sharing your time with us. Hey, listeners out there, I know we're getting ready to, we got the music starting to lead in here, but active self-protection, development or the class coming up June 20th, 21st, make sure you go to c4traininggroup.com, or you can go directly to activeselfprotection.com/shop. Sign up for this class. It is going to be worth it. This is going to be evidence-based techniques based on two professional instructors. So we'll see you next week. Everybody drive safe. Peace out.
Price RV, Auto Trim Design, by Rogers Auto Repair, and by Frontier Outfitters. To listen back to this or any past episode, log on to KFARradio.com.